Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. By any measure, the year 2022 has been transformative. The conflict in Ukraine, global inflation, growing food insecurity, and the West's demand that you are with this or against this dominated our attention. On this edition of Crosstalk, we discuss some of these issues and more. Crosstalking 2022, I'm joined by my guest here in Moscow, Xavier Moreau. He is the founder of the Center of Political Strategic Analysis, Stratpol. We also have Maxim Shuchkov. He is the director of the Center for Advanced American Studies at Moscow State Institute of International Relations. And in Budapest, we cross to George Samueli. He is a podcaster at the Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in any time you want, and I always appreciate it. George, let me go to you first in Budapest. I suppose it's kind of an understatement on my part here, but what was the event, the idea, the person that transformed this year? Because I think all of us would agree, maybe not on what did it the most, but it was a transformational year. Go ahead, George.
Well, it was a transformational year because what happened in February was the end of the post-Cold War era, the end of the era of the unipolar moment in which the West got to demand that this is the way the world has to be ordered, and everybody had to jump to it. And Russia shattered that equation. And by doing that, and by withstanding everything that the West, NATO, the United States threw at it, the mother of all sanctions that they boasted, all of the weapon systems that they sent into Ukraine, by doing that, Russia essentially shattered that that moment. And the rest of the world has looked on. And I think that it's going to be very, very difficult for the West to recover from that and to restore the hegemony that it had been boasting of since 1989 and Fukuyama's famous The End of History essay.
Well, Maxine, basically the same question here. I mean, we had George Bush Sr. talk about a new world order, which has been widely discussed. But I think in this year, we do have a new world order. It's maybe not very neat and clean and smooth, but something is emerging. And I agree with George. We're leaving something in the past. Maxime, your thoughts?
Well, as the 9/11 atrocities have concluded the era of 1990s and marked perhaps the start of the end of the unipolar world or the unipolar moment, as they, you know, branded it back in 1990s, I think this year the conflict in Ukraine has marked an ending to the era of 2000s, where Russia has sought to find a common denominator in relations with the West, predominantly based on this counterterrorism agenda, which has not been embraced on a number of occasions by Western counterparts. So we're now definitely entering a new era. We don't know what it is, so we perhaps cannot call it in any way, but we can call it by what it is not. It is an end of post-post bipolar era. And the reason that there are so many emerging powers in the global South in particular that are now very much, I wouldn't say they're dictating the terms, but their policies matter so much more than they used to matter even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, tells us that this polycentric world is shaping up objectively.
Yeah, well, I mean, Xavier, the West isn't taking that very easily, okay? I mean, I think all of us can agree on that. But hegemony, you know, once you have it, you don't like to lose it. Xavier, you know, for me, in this year, one event can kind of crystallize everything that we've already said here was the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines, okay? And it remains a mystery for some people here. But that it's a metaphor, and it's very physical. It's material. There was a huge breach that is not going to be healed for a very long time. Xavier.
Yes, of course. The 2022, it's the year of the destruction of the European economy, not by Russia, but by Washington. And as you perfectly underlined, we observe that London or Washington, it's not so important, can destroy pipelines with a very fundamental energetical infrastructure for the continental Europe. And neither Berlin nor Paris dare to even just saying it's not Russia. It should not be already a thing, but they didn't dare say anything on who is guilty. So, in my opinion, the most important fact is the complete destruction of the European economy by Washington, and neither again Berlin nor Paris did say something.
Well, it's very interesting you mentioned that, George. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, one thing that marks the year that's ending is this amazing propaganda program of not allowing any kind of dissent on the Ukraine narrative. It's really extraordinary. A lot of people have been denied platforms. RT, that you're on right now, has been attacked. But what has really happened is that we keep hearing about unity, unity, unity. Zelensky goes to Washington, unity. But, you know, Xavier is absolutely right. You know, Paris and Berlin will never say anything now against American hegemony. They'll just have to suck it up, George.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the arrogance that the United States displays towards its close allies is quite extraordinary. Xavier mentions about the Nord Stream pipelines. They know perfectly well who did it, and we know it because of the silence. If there was any the slightest evidence that Russia was behind it, then, you know, we wouldn't have heard the end of it. I mean, it would be just constant barking from everyone in Europe. Instead, there is silence. They know perfectly well who's behind it, and they're keeping quiet about it. Then we have the business of the European dependence on liquefied natural gas from the United States. So Macron comes along and says, we are paying four times as much for liquefied natural gas as the Americans. And how does the Biden administration react? And they'll say, yeah, okay, that's what you're doing. But what about your Inflation Reduction Act? You know, you're prioritizing American industry to European industry. And so the Americans respond. The Americans do not care. They do not care. The whole policy in Ukraine has been driven by the United States. You know, all the way back to 2008, when the Bush administration insisted on making that promise to Ukraine about eventual NATO membership, the Europeans have had no say in this, and they have had to bear the cost. And, you know, as we head into the new year, we know that anything that the Europeans want, you know, if they want some sort of a settlement in Ukraine, they don't have the means at all of insisting on it. And the Americans will squelch any agreement that they're not happy with. It'll be decided on America's terms, or at least that's how Washington sees it. We don't care at all what Paris and Berlin has to say.
You know, Maxime, this year also marks, at least in my opinion, being a historian of Russian history, is that this breach that we have within the European landmass is that Russia, after 300 years, is basically, at least for the time being, to turn its back on Europe. And that is world historic. Maxime.
That is true. However, I think, you know, and we're already hearing this, you know, noises that Russia shouldn't be doing this in different organizations, you know, that, you know, Russia just has to leave Ukraine and that things will be back on track. I think those who are advocating this stance do not really realize the full scope of the kind of the mental shift that has happened over the past few months in the Russian society, perhaps even more than the Russian elites, but the Russian elites are shifting as well, perhaps at just a slower pace. And these, you know, the strive to build links with the rest of the world, with the Middle Eastern countries, with the Asian countries, is so big. And that is actually, you know, has happened in the past Russian history, that the major shifts had to happen because of some crisis. You know, it usually Russia is slow to react to changes until, you know, there is some crisis situation where it just has to do so. Such was the case during the World War II, where most of the industries that carried the Soviet Union success were built during the most hardest and toughest years of the war, such is the case right now. And the problem is, if, you know, things are settled over some time, it will be hard to, you know, return all the things that are being lost now. That is the case for the companies that prefer to leave Russia. That is the case for the industries that now are undergoing severe changes and dramatic changes. And I think eventually it will be a harder loss. And one of the programs, Peter, you mentioned that, you know, the calculus is right now for the Europeans to get through this winter. But the long-term challenges, you know, getting through the other 3 to 5 winters, and this is the new norm. This is a new reality, and everyone will have to adapt.
Yeah, well, Xavier, before we go to the break here, I mean, you know, there's always been this question, you know, does Russia need Europe more than Europe needs Russia? Well, I think the question is being answered. I mean, Russia is the most sanctioned country in the world. Life is fine, okay? Everybody's getting through it, okay? Sure, there's some annoyances, but I don't think the Europeans can say the same thing as the average Russian. Xavier, before we go to the break, go ahead.
Yes, of course, the Europe completely underestimate the weight of the Russian economy in the European economy, because they were considering that okay, it's only 3% on the world market, but it's maybe it's globally 3%, but it's very important for fertilizer, it's very important for energy, it's very important for nuclear energy. They have underestimated this as well, and actually the West globally completely underestimated the weight of the Russian economy, the power of his army, the determination not only of Vladimir Putin but of the Russian population. And just would like to underline that 1 year ago exactly Vladimir Putin tried to give one last chance to enforce the
Xavier, hold that thought. We're going to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the year that's about to pass. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing 2022. Okay, let's go back to Xavier here in Moscow. We ran into a hard break, and you didn't get to finish your point, so please do now. Go ahead.
Thank you, Peter. Yet I just would like to underline that, and in my opinion, it will remain in history that 1 year ago, exactly 1 year ago, Vladimir Putin tried to give a last chance to France, to Germany, and even to NATO to implement the Minsk Agreement, which should have been implemented, enforced on December 2015. So we saw how long Vladimir Putin waits till started this special operation. So actually, and paradoxically, what we observe is that Putin gave a last chance to NATO. And unfortunately, we saw and know, we exactly know that the Minsk Agreement were never signed to be implemented, as exactly said not only Mr. Poroshenko, but Angela Merkel. And I'm sure that it's the same for Paris, that all these agreements were done not to be implemented. And that gives now a very important question, exactly what said Dmitry Medvedev 2 days ago, that there is nobody with which we can sign, okay, and about what we are going to sign. So the problem in 2023, it's what kind of agreement can be reached.
Well, you know,
there is nobody we can trust.
That is the point here, George. You know, agreement incapable. I think that is a brilliant Russian word, and it's actually getting greater currency. Okay, I came across it maybe like 2 years ago, but George, you know, kind of an extension of what Xavier was saying. You know, when I look at the propaganda coverage of this conflict, Mr. Zelensky goes to Washington and all this, But George, Russia's security demands have not changed. And this is something that, you know, responsible statecraft and all these people, they don't want to recognize this. They're in their own bubble here. And I want to address the same question to Maxime here. But, you know, we're ending the year basically in the same place, okay? If you're not going to listen to our demands, why should we listen to yours, George?
Yes, that's exactly right, because the security demands, they go all the way back to the 1990s, to the days when the West's favorite boy, Boris Yeltsin, was in power in Moscow, and they continued to raise the issue of NATO expansion. And they complained, and the West ignored their complaints. And why did they ignore their complaints? Because there was nothing Russia could do about it. And so I said, well, Russia can't do anything. They may complain about, well, the Baltic states are being incorporated into NATO. So what are you going to do about it? Well, of course, Russia couldn't do anything about it. And so finally, when the Ukraine issue came up, the West response was exactly the same. What are you going to do about it? And then obviously Russia gave the answer. But this is really where it comes to it. You see, the West is only prepared to talk to Russia about the issues that interest the United States. The United States is interested in the issue of strategic nuclear weapons because there Russia has built up an edge, and the United States is anxious to overcome that edge. So it's willing to talk to Russia about that. Well, when it comes to NATO, the expansion of NATO, and surrounding Russia by a littoral of NATO states, the United States isn't willing to talk about that because, hey, we've got the advantage here. There's nothing Russia can do about it short of going to war, so we're not going to talk about it. Now, of course, in February the 24th, Russia said, well, we are going to do something about it, and so then Russia changed the equation. But as Xavier said, there were plenty of opportunities. I mean, all the way through to February, right all the way to the days up to February the 24th, when Chancellor Scholz and President Macron made their visits to Moscow. And, you know, even at that moment, there could have been something done to stop this. But they didn't do it. Instead, they just spouted their usual cliches, the same cliches they've been spouting for decades.
Well, Maxime, what happened to the concept of indivisibility of security? Because that was the mantra of the Helsinki process, okay? And I seem to remember that this term came into circulation like in December and January, people learning about it again. But that is the reality. And the West has forgotten about that. And that's why we've found ourselves in the position where we are now. Because the European security architecture was designed without Russia and against Russia. And on February 24th, they said no more. It's no longer the case. Go ahead, Maxime.
Look, we're in a stage of a kind of what I would call a prolonged groundhog day, because the same things that are being discussed now have been debated back in the mid-2000s when Vladimir Putin first delivered his Munich speech, which triggered many policymakers in the West. But the point of that speech was that you can't just promote, you know, the color revolutions at the time in Ukraine and Georgia and your vision of a unipolar world without, you know, facing the consequences that are there, the security consequences in particular. That address wasn't taken seriously, or it was taken, but interpreted in its own way. And what followed was the war in Georgia a year after. Another, kind of address appeal to the West happened when Putin spoke in the UN General Assembly in September 2015, offering the West a counterterrorism partnership in the wake of the crisis situation unraveling in Syria. That too wasn't really embraced, and that led to the Russian operation and Russian military campaign in Syria. And we're then in the situation of November last year, as my colleagues already discussed, where, you know, a very serious issue was raised and put on the table for the discussion and was pretty much was waved off. And what we see today is the product of that diplomatic negligence
such a diplomatic negligence. Perfect. Write that down on a post-it and put it in your wallet, because that's exactly what we've experienced here. Xavier, another really big trend of this year is the global south, or the global majority, as I like to call it. they stood up and they said no. Okay, yeah. No to sanctions. No, and they're fleeing the dollar. I mean, we finally see this huge paradigm shift that so many have talked about over the decades, but now it's actually happening. The global South is going its own way, and it's going to decide on its own partners. Oh, and by the way, Xavier, they don't like so-called Western values. Go ahead, Xavier.
Exactly. Exactly. If you observe in Africa, things have changed because, and they look at in the Russian direction to find an alternative because they are afraid by this LGBT values which are promoted by the West. And I would like to add that actually the West is isolated because not only China, not only India decided to prioritize the national interests, but such a long-term friend like Saudi Arabia decided to not officially to support Russia, but for instance, to take a decision about decreasing the oil production with Russia, which is completely destroyed all the anti-Russian economical sanctions. So we are in a new world, and actually the West has underestimated the weight of the new economics. Because for Russia, it was quite easy to find alternative market, not only for oil and gas, but for fertilizers, for anything Russia can sell. So again, the West has completely underestimated and Russia and the determination of the other countries who are tired of following the order of the global West.
You know, George, Xavier said something that's really important here in having an alternative to the West. And again, there's a huge literature on this. We're not inventing it on this program here. But it's actually, you know, it's taking on flesh now. It's actually becoming real. Because not only do they reject these values, they're not as afraid. They're still a little bit, but not as afraid of the West as they've been in the past. George.
Yes. I mean, in some ways, we're going back to the model of the Cold War, in which the Soviet Union was the leader of the global resistance to Western hegemony. But back then, the Soviet Union just simply wasn't economically powerful enough to challenge the hegemony of the United States, at least in economic terms. They could militarily. But so now, you know, the rest of the world, which basically during that unipolar moment just had to do as they're told, now, you know, they have a leader of the resistance. And I think that's Russia's role in the world. And that's why Russia, though economically, obviously, it's not as strong as China, but that's why Russia is in the crosshairs as far as the West is concerned, because, you know, the West sees Russia as the leader of the global resistance. And that just it infuriates, you know, the United States, the United Kingdom, that, you know, much of the rest of the world just says, look, we don't care about, you know, your agenda. And, you know, Russia actually speaks for us, speaks for our interests, speaks for our values. And this is something that the West is determined to stop. And I think, you know, but, you know, the whole NATO encirclement of Russia is really all about that, you know, how to knock Russia out from you know, from its global leadership position.
You know, Maxime, one of the interesting things, again, the Western media, well, you know, Russia's isolated and all that. But I mean, if you go outside of the Western media bubble, the world is watching Russia take on the entirety of the West, and it's still standing and actually is has great prospects. It's really a world historic moment here. We have about 45 seconds. Go ahead, Maxime.
Well, absolutely. And I think the problem with that consideration is not just that the self-illusion, it's that the West, by thinking that this is the case, presses so hard and, you know, shrinks the space for neutrality for the rest of the world. Now that we're seeing another trend where countries are moving from non-alignment to multi-alignment, for the better, for the worse, but eventually they're trying to diversify their geopolitical, economic, and other stakes with different actors, Russia in particular. And that is also tells us that this kind of unipolar world with the dictatorship of the West and the political institutions is shrinking, but it's going to take time.
Yeah, and you know, the West always talks about diversity, but they don't like diversity of ideas around the world. That's really quite amazing here. Everything is inverted here. 2022 is going to be a year remembered long into the future and by future historians. And I think we just wrote the first page. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests here in Moscow and in Budapest. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.